Blog Talk Radio.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
Universe Radio Show is on the air. Now, this is normally about the time I would say, hi, I'm Jason Easley, and welcome to beautiful, sunny Western Pennsylvania. But it's not beautiful or sunny in lovely southwestern Pennsylvania today. It is dark, rainy, gloomy, and generally it looks like a good Sunday to stay in bed. Well, thank you for joining us on the show this week. Will is once again absent. He's out winning and fighting in the Civil War again. So this week, I'm fortunate enough to have with me a special guest co-host. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome George.
Hello, Jason. George, how are you?
Oh, good. How are you today?
I am doing fantastic. I am...
Do you realize I made the show start by 5 seconds?
Really?
My cue, I exactly had everything set up within 5 seconds. Wow. I dialed in and it said, you go live in 5 seconds. I was like, whoa. Okay. Luckily, I already knew how I was going to lead this thing off and what today's topic was, and I was just fishing for a quote,
yes,
playing around on the computer, so it was no big deal. Now, today's big subject, George,
mm-hmm,
if you don't mind, I think we're going to talk about immigration today.
Well, what are we talking about?
Do you have a problem with immigration?
Immigration?
Yeah. As an issue, as a position?
My whole feeling about immigration is basically just a matter of trying to. That's a difficult topic there because.
Well, I'm going to ask you next what you felt strongly about in the news we wanted to talk about. I just want to give you a little insight,
yeah,
into kind of where I'm going today because I don't know if you saw it or not. Newt Gingrich made some remarks the other day.
Oh, really?
Saying that that English should be the only language in the country. And the languages of the ghetto should not be taught in our schools.
Ooh, that's
yeah,
not exactly
I'll give the full quote in a little while, but this sort of sets up the premise for today's immigration discussion.
Right.
So basically, as a general nutshell rule, I mean, you live in New York.
I live
in Pennsylvania. We don't really have immigration issues.
Well, I mean, we don't, here.
We
as in New York and everything, we are pretty much a melting pot, you know, like ourselves.
Yeah.
I mean, like, We have brought in so many different cultures, so many different languages, and we have allowed them to basically communicate as they are most comfortable. And every now and then, it can get a little trying when it comes to trying to get information from somebody who is in a position to give information but does not have the ability to do it.
Yeah,
that's the only area where it gets frustrating. On the other hand, when it comes to people basically just kind of like, you know, bringing their cultures in, I mean, that's basically something that America's been doing for hundreds of years now.
See, you brought up exactly the blurring of the question that a lot of anti-immigration opponents use.
Yes.
They want to base this on an economic argument, but the reality is it's more of a cultural argument.
Exactly. Here in Pennsylvania,
we don't have an immigration problem per se of too many immigrants. If anything, the area where I live, the southwestern part of the state, except for the city of Pittsburgh, is rather white.
Mm-hmm.
Very white.
Yeah.
If anything, we could use an influx of more immigrants. And also, we do have a problem in the state of almost a labor shortage.
Mm-hmm.
We sort of welcome immigrants that can come in and handle some of the work, depending on which part of the state you're in. So I can't really relate. I'm not condemning anybody who lives in a border state for their position, because their problems, we're Northeasterners, basically, and we don't understand.
Right. I mean,
we're not
in California, yeah. We're not in New Mexico, we're not in Arizona, we're not in Texas.
And it's a huge issue. It's a huge issue all over the border.
It definitely is. But at the same time, like, this is one of those issues that everybody feels like they have to take to the extreme. It's very much in the same sort of sense as what you had said in your political universe column.
Oh, pissing my column on the air.
Of course, you do want to come back on the show.
because
it just happened to be something that I agree with. And when that's the case, it was just like, okay, I'm going to plug that. When you had said about the Iraq War, I don't want to steer it off of that subject, onto that subject, but you did mention that both sides, the Republicans and Democrats, are basically doing this whole extremist setup with this particular issue. And that's something that's happening, the same thing with immigration. Like, I remember when, obviously this was a very long time ago, this was back in like 96 when Pat Buchanan was running for president, and he was doing the whole Fortress America, kind of setup, saying that we were going to, build a wall around this nation and everything like that. And all of a sudden, you're in John Carpenter territory there. That's just something that's too extreme. There has to be a happy medium here.
Yeah, the building a wall along the southern border, first of all, it won't work.
Right.
It's practically a terrible idea. From a practicality point of view, it's a terrible idea.
Yeah.
And secondly, it is
a horrendous idea.
Secondly, as Americans and people who believe in freedom, do we really start wanting to fence ourselves in or keep others out?
Right.
And that's the philosophical point of this debate. But the big question here is, when you listen to anti-immigrant forces speak, it always starts out as an economic issue or a rights issue.
Mm-hmm.
My personal position on immigration, not to get all Hillary Clinton nuanced on anyone,
but
it really is, If a person is going to become a citizen of this country and deal with the federal government, if you're going to send in your income tax form, your Social Security forms, whatever you do through the federal government, you should do that in English if you're going to be a citizen of this country.
Yes.
If you're going to interact with the federal government, where English is the predominant, basically de facto official language, you need to do that hold your interaction in that way. It's nice that the government prints all these forms and ballots in all these languages. It's great. But I don't think it's a necessity. Now, that being said, when it comes to what we're going to talk about with Newt Gingrich here in a little while, he was talking about schools.
Yes.
Specifically, and bilingual education. I think that anyone who wants to try to take bilingualism out of schools is going backwards.
Definitely.
If anything, we need to have our own kids, our own American kids, become more bilingual.
Oh, especially considering the fact that there are so many, students that are out there and everything that want nothing more than to study overseas.
Yeah.
There are so many different people that want that extra international culture. They want to feel worldly. They want to study as much as possible. And one thing that I've understood, and this is something that having taken a couple of languages in high school, and I could not remember practically anything from that. The younger you get it, the younger you are taught this, the more chance it's going to have to lock in.
Yeah,
and
I mean, I'm not saying that every kid in this country should learn Spanish,
right?
Or they should learn Chinese. They should learn something. It's a good intellectual skill.
Yes.
it builds intellectual ability. I mean, if a person, a child develops the flexibility to learn a second or third language, they're going to be better adept at not only socialization and functioning, but actually dealing with and coping with and thinking creatively about problems.
Exactly.
It opens your mind.
There has to be, there's more than one way to solve a problem. You know, that's something
And that's basically the point of if there's more than one language, because I've always thought that this whole English-only debate was a bit racist from the point of view or a bit self-centered or a bit Americanized simply because we want the people that advocate English-only, they want English to be the only language in the world.
Yes.
That's all they see it as. And that's just not true.
Right.
That's just not true at all. I mean, as someone who has spent many of their college years tutoring international students, living with international students, being around people from all over the world on a daily basis, I can tell you that those people that come over, there are kids that come to this country as high school kids that, you know, spend a year here or they transfer here, and they know five or six languages. Why is it we can't get American kids to nail down their own language?
Right. There's also the added benefit that they have about it. This is kind of like something that I remember Bill Cosby talking about, you know, years back in one of his comedy.
I swear to God, if you mention Jello Pudding Pops,
don't you hit that disconnect button yet. Don't you hit that dump button yet, okay?
No, I was just going to put you on hold and go get a Jell-O pudding pop.
Oh, there you go.
What he said was,
sometimes it's about a half-hour drive or a two-hour drive over in Europe to go from one language to another. In the United States, you can drive for 8 days and not run into another language.
Yeah.
That's basically like the way we're set. You know, like we are so isolated in our area, in our, you know, like little spot on the globe, which really isn't all that significant if you look at the globe. And then you have Europe with tons of different languages all around that are all connected to the same massive land.
And then all the languages, except all share basically two or three common roots. Every single one of them have been derived from two or three different ancient sources.
Yeah,
you know, and they've just developed over time. But here, if you've ever been, because I know New York is very diverse, and I've been in New York a few times. but I also go to Canada as well, and that's another diverse. If you go around Toronto, another diverse city, a very diverse city.
Mm-hmm.
And I see major cities, and I don't necessarily think this is a good thing or a bad thing, but I just think this is okay. You know, this is okay. The diversity, the multilingualism is okay, and I actually think it's a good thing from a cultural point of view.
I don't see any reason
to go ballistic and get bent out of shape because we're trying to protect the white man's superiority. Is what I think a lot of this comes down to when you get to the border states.
It really is.
You know,
it really is. I mean, it's basically all the people who are advocating, you know, the use of English only and everything are basically just kind of like, they're, you know, like holding on to what they have and everything and saying, like, this is mine. You know, this is mine right here. If they take away the English language, then that's one thing that they have.
It's almost a tenet of conservatism that you're always going to be looking forward instead of back.
Yeah.
If you look at things from a conservative point of view, you want to return back to something.
Yeah.
That's just a staple of most modern conservative rhetoric, let's say, for the last 50 years.
Well, that's basically what the word conservative means. It's holding back.
Yeah.
You know, like you are holding back. You are restraining yourself, basically.
I know Mark Radlich called this show progressive conservatism radio, and he actually is fairly progressive, but I keep telling you, he's not a conservative. He's not a Republican.
Right.
He's really basically, when he lies on his positions, he's basically a conservative Democrat.
Which is fine.
He's pro-environment and all this. I'm like, you're not a Republican. I'm sorry, but you try to walk into a Republican group with that kind of stuff coming in your mouth, they're going to shout you out of the room.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the other thing. When you deal with just the basic conservative nature of the discussion, there doesn't have to be an English or no English.
Right.
It doesn't have to be an in-school, out-of-school. We can find a happy medium.
And that it's and there. That's basically like what you know, like what we should be looking for. We should be looking for a happy medium on all issues. It's not even culture, not even just immigration, but on all the issues. There is more than one answer to solve a problem, and that's the thing that, that a lot of people in Washington just don't understand.
And I think your sentiments are echoed by a great majority of the population, because we've been through the politics of extremism now. Probably, I would put it, since the Clinton administration, we're entering into like our 15th year of extremist politics.
Yeah.
And everyone's starting to get a little tired of it.
It really is.
It's just tiresome.
It's, you know, like there's only so many times when you can hear the whole, like, you know, you're either with us or you hate America. You know,
There's only so many times you can hear right, wrong, black, white. And this isn't just left. This isn't just left or right.
Right.
This is both. Because when one side sticks out of position, the other side takes the other extreme, and then they just basically get up their scabbards and duel.
Mm-hmm. Right. It goes back to like,
it's not good.
Like looking at the 2004 election where you had the whole, you know, the whole Kerry flip-flops thing. You know, saying how, you know, like obviously – he worded it badly. He worded it like, I voted for this bill before I voted against it. But at the same time...
That's a huge understatement.
But at the same time, they were penalizing this man, and they basically, you know, like, this wound up, like, costing him election and everything because he was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. And
why?
You know what was funny?
Like, they're condemning thinking.
The expertise of this administration, and Karl Rove specifically, is to demean intellect, and also, secondly, they're good at taking your strength and turning it into a weakness.
Yes.
Like, Kerry would have been straightforward and stopped his blue blood mumbling from the beginning, he would have come off as everything that Bush wasn't.
Yeah.
An experienced military person. I mean, if anything, this nation right now is calling out, crying for people with military experience to come in and clean up this mess in Iraq.
Yeah.
I mean, they're aching. I'm not saying it has to be the president, but the next administration is going to have to come in and clean all this up.
Yeah.
There's no. We cannot have like I like Barack Obama. I really like Barack Obama.
Yeah.
But I'm leery because he does lack experience.
Mm-hmm.
And do we really need another on-the-job training president after we went through George W. Bush?
That's true. I mean, like this would have been, you know, like people are saying how this would have been, you know, such, you know, this is getting to be like such this great time where we have, you know, like somebody either a black man or a woman that would be, you know, like a president. But at the same time, like there are other viable candidates, you know, like my particular pick, my particular, you know.
I know your pick. You're going to go ahead and do it. I was going to actually face like, for this today.
You know, I am, you know, like my guy is Joe Biden. You know, like that's somebody who, you know, like I look at as somebody who is incredibly intelligent, incredibly, you know, like articulate, even though he does every now and then slip up and say something stupid.
You mean like Barack Obama being a clean,
that was
black man?
Yeah, that's just one of those things. That was basically like his coming out party, you know, for being.
I'm just letting the world know that he's here.
I think he just kind of got it out of his system and just said, "There, I just stupid."
You knew he had to do one somewhere along the way.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like,
now,
you know,
I don't.
If he did get away with it, you know, then he would have probably screwed up a few more times. But the fact that he got called on it immediately helps him a lot.
Now, I know you're a Biden guy, and we're going to talk – actually, in future weeks, you're going to be on basically every week if you can do it. And
definitely.
one of the things I want to do is talk about the other candidates that don't get a lot of attention.
Yes.
The Joe Bidens, the Bill Richardsons, the Sam Brownbacks, you know, and we'll go into Newt today, but we're going to talk about Newt in a very negative light, but we'll go into some of the lower-tier candidates in future weeks. But well, being that you live in New York State, Hillary's your senator, I almost have to ask.
Yeah.
What's your opinion?
My opinion on Hillary. I think that she has some – I think she does have, you know, like some very, you know, good ideas. I think that she is somebody who can do a lot of good. But at the same time, I just feel like we've gone through either a Bush or a Clinton – since 1988.
Yeah.
And the fact that we could have a Clinton on top of another Bush, it's a little scary. It's almost coming off like a monarchy. It's either,
You know, like we just have two political dynasties, and then you have Jeb Bush waiting in the wings.
Oh, please, no.
Yeah, well, there's a new book being released. It's a glowing biography of Jeb, and it's pretty – I would say 2008 out of the question, but 2012,
yeah,
you can almost count on Jeb Bush being there.
Yeah, and I just feel like the time has come for a very different type of candidate, and, you know, this is not – I'm not, you know, like condemning, you know, like Hillary for anything that she's done, anything that she's, you know, like said or anything like that, because I do think that she can do a lot of good. But at the same time, she's already in the Senate. She's already basically doing what she can. And
my whole point, excuse me, I didn't know you were finished. Go ahead.
That's okay.
My whole point too involving Hillary is I don't trust her on the Iraq War. I don't trust her position shifting. And I just don't know if she's experienced enough to be president. I mean,
that's true.
It's not necessarily a personal thing with me and Hillary, but I mean, there is a part of me that's just tired. And I don't want to spend a whole campaign season dealing with the Clinton scandals being dug up again all next year.
Right. And basically now, all it is now is just before when the Clinton scandals were out, you know, especially, you know, like Monica Gate, which was what, you know, wound up being like, you know, you can say like kind of the downfall, but at the same time, you know, like Clinton left with a great, you know, approval rating.
Yeah.
So I think that I think that I would definitely consider his presidency to be a success, especially considering everything we've had for the past 6 years.
The way Bill Clinton screwed up the Democratic Party wasn't Monica Gate.
Right.
He screwed up the Democratic Party by trying to take the Democratic Party in a direction, and then he left office.
Yes.
And then the party sort of lost its identity.
Right, and the main thing was
Clinton moved them to the middle right, and then the next people that came in weren't sure where to go after that.
Right.
And that's why you've seen the last two campaigns really struggle to find an identity.
Definitely.
I think, though, Obama is the allure of Obama. Obama is that fresh voice.
Yes.
And if there is one person, he and Giuliani are both, I really do think Giuliani's going to fall apart.
Oh yeah,
He starts having to go into heavy red states.
Yeah.
And defending his positions.
Oh yeah.
And I keep telling people who love Rudy, I'm like, he hasn't been negative campaigned against. People aren't running negative. His opponents aren't running negative ads against him.
Right.
His numbers are going to be really high because he's new and people have memories of him after 9/11. But once everybody starts breaking apart his positions, and he's put into the microscope, his numbers are going to fall with conservatives.
Yes.
Because you know, you see polling, and some of the new polling always ask the question about if you knew ahead of time that Rudy Giuliani was pro-choice and pro-gun, would you vote for him? And the numbers flip. He goes from like a 60% yes rating to a 60% no rating.
Exactly.
And I think part of Giuliani's appeal though is that John McCain is so unappealing.
All right, let me get to John McCain here, because John McCain is somebody that...
by the way, we're going to save the immigration talk for after the 2 o'clock news, so
yeah.
You know, we will get back there. I have
okay.
it in mind.
All right, but...
Let me
just put in my two cents on John McCain. He was somebody when he was campaigning, when he was, you know, ready to go into the primaries and everything, he looked like he was just going to be a great leader of this country who was really going to take charge and was going to basically just kind of, you know, take the ball from, you know, like from Clinton and sprint towards the end zone, and everything looked great. And then all of a sudden he got smeared by the Bush party that completely destroyed him. And now all of a sudden he is nowhere near the kind of man that he was when we first met him in 2000. And that's
Maverick,
what scares me.
The Maverick stance is gone. And
yes.
It's been replaced by Mr. Conservative.
Exactly. And that's the thing. This is something that I really think the Democrats need to just go out and attack with. This is one of those things where the Republican Party – I'm sorry, I'm still here.
I knew you were.
Sorry, I
didn't hear any sort of like dead air, like silence or.
Yeah, so
I think it'd be okay.
So anyway, somebody was. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought here.
Party.
Okay, basically what had happened was the Republican Party is giving the Democrats so much ammunition to use. All they have to do is air all of the, you know, like little snippets of the speeches that he has made during the 2000 run, and then compare that to his appearance at the 2004 convention, his meetings with Jerry Falwell, everything else, you know, like in there, and show that they, you know, the Republican Party has a flip flopper of their own, and it's a very dangerous one.
The amazing thing about John McCain is John McCain has literally transformed himself simply by making every wrong decision for every single question about this campaign.
Absolutely.
He has just made horrible choices.
Yeah, he's not listening to his heart anymore. He's listening to what, you know, like what the voters want to hear.
Yeah, he's trying to be the mainstream Republican and get all the endorsements, and he thinks he needs the Bush people to win.
Yeah.
But he might need the Bush people to win the nomination, but he's going to get killed in the general election against anybody.
Yes.
With these positions he's evolving into.
Oh, yeah.
And that's just – and it's kind of like McCain's dilemma. Does he do what he needs to do to win the nomination and try to slide back to the middle in the fall, or does he stick to his guns, keep most of the Republican base alienated, and probably not win the nomination? If he had a regular mainstream conservative candidate against him, I would say this was dangerous. But he's going against Giuliani.
Yes.
He can afford to go to the middle.
Yeah.
And he won't. Instead, he's going more to the right. And it's crucifying him among independents and Democrats.
Exactly.
Like, he's getting killed. I mean, he would probably lose actually to Hillary Clinton right now. And Hillary is a weak frontrunner. I mean, Hillary
is. Yes, she is. Because there are a lot of people out there, like you said, that don't trust her on certain issues, and you know, and that's really where my support for her ends. It was just like there are certain things that I appreciate her, you know, like for taking a stance for and everything. I mean, I work at a women's organization, and everything that they are really hoping for, you know, she is supporting, and I think that's terrific. And because it's all basically, you know, it's very much like the right things to do. But then on the other hand, you have national security, you have Iraq, and it's a situation where your trust for her only goes so far.
Yeah. And if one thing undermines Hillary and McCain could both be undermined by the Iraq issue.
Yes.
They could both basically see their campaigns implode by the Iraq issue.
And that's where I think that Joe Biden has a leg up on this, because he actually has some sort of a plan. For, you know, whether it's a good plan or a bad plan or whatever, at least he has something that he's actually sketched out and shown to basically put down on the table and say, like, this is what we can do. This is another option.
You know, my sneaking suspicion about Joe Biden has always been this campaign isn't about running for president. It's about running for vice president.
That's just a major thing. That is a major thing. Like, I think that, you know, like if he winds up being somebody's vice presidential candidate, then that is a great thing. To me is a great thing, because
especially if it's an inexperienced person like Barack Obama.
Yes.
If Barack is the nominee and you bring in somebody with Bill Richardson or Joe Biden,
yeah,
two candidates that have just sterling resumes and tons of knowledge.
Yes.
You pair a somewhat inexperienced novice type like Obama or a Hillary even with a Biden, with a Richardson, and all of a sudden all those little fears about their experience and credibility go away. Kind of like what the Bush people did with Cheney.
Exactly.
They
and then all of a sudden
Cheney on them.
And then all of a sudden the presidential debates take a back seat to the vice presidential debates.
Yeah.
Because that basically is, say, the AFC or NFC championship game. The presidential debate is a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, but when you have a candidate like Joe Biden, somebody who can basically destroy, you know, like anybody, you know, like who is in front of him, because of the way that he thinks, you know, like every time I've seen him on Meet the Press, I've seen him on Real Time, I've seen him, you know, like on, you know, different shows and everything, and he always is. He's articulate. He is intelligent, incredibly intelligent on the right issues, and that's the main thing. He's intelligent on the right issues instead of the wrong ones. He knows what to dwell on and what to dismiss.
Hey, George, it's 2 o'clock. We're going to go to World News, and we'll cover resume the discussion right after this.
All right.
The Political Universe time is 2 p.m., and here is the news. At a press conference at Camp David on Saturday, President Bush once again reasserted his full support for Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez against criticism about the role he might have played in the firings of federal prosecutors. The president was meeting with Brazilian President Luiz Inácio da Silva at the time. The president went on to say that, quote, he is providing documents for Congress to find the truth, he will testify in front of Congress, and he will tell the truth, end quote. While at Camp David, President Bush called on the Iranian government to free the, quote, hostages, end quote, referring to the British sailors that were captured last week while in what the British government asserts as being Iraqi waters. The president went on to call the incident as, quote, inexcusable, end quote, and that, quote, Iran must give back the hostages, end quote. After touring the Walter Reed Army Medical Center on Friday, President Bush apologized for the conditions that recovering veterans have encountered at the medical center. The president went on to say that, quote, bureaucratic and administrative failures, end quote, were to blame. He also said that, quote, the system failed you and it failed our troops and we're going to fix it, end quote. This comes as the U.S. Army released a press release that announces that its top civilian is interested in promoting public awareness of hospital and outpatient care under the 2005 Base Realignment and Closure Law. According to the Honorable Pete Guerin, Acting Secretary of the Army, quote, closing Walter Reed as required by law in the 2005 base closure and realignment by September 15, 2011, will improve health care of our service members and their families, end quote. According to the press release, renovations that are required to update Walter Reed Army Medical Center will be costly and disrupt the care to the patients for, quote, protracted periods, end quote, and would have the unintended effect of disturbing the medical system's ability to provide care to the same number of patients at the present time. In the release, Guerin went on to say that, quote, we are committed to maintaining the highest standards of patient care at Walter Reed and will continue to provide seamless, world-class care while transforming our medical facilities to provide the very best medical health care for our wounded warriors at Bethesda and Belvoir, end quote. He went on to say that, quote, it is the debt of our nation in gratitude to their selfless service, end quote. The Midwest has been hit hard by tornadoes in the past 48 hours. Around 60 tornadoes leave 4 people dead in their paths. According to the National Weather Service, at least 65 tornadoes touched down in the states of Nebraska, Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas, and Colorado. The White House is criticizing Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi and 6 other members of Congress representing both sides of the aisle who will be traveling to Syria, as recommended by the Iraq Study Group. White House Deputy Press Secretary Dana Perino said that, quote, we think that someone should take a step back and think about the message that it sends and the message that it sends to our allies, end quote. According to a press release from Speaker Pelosi's office on Saturday, Brendan Daly, Communications Director for Nancy Pelosi, released this statement saying, quote, as recommended by the Iraq Study Group, a bipartisan delegation led by Speaker Pelosi intends to discuss a wide range of security issues affecting the United States and the Middle East with representatives of governments in the region, including Syria, end quote. In other news, a plea deal that was offered by prosecutors to former New York City Police Commissioner Bernard Carrick has been turned down by the defense. That is what's happening in the world. You are listening to The Political Universe here on Blog Talk Radio.
Well, thanks for that news, Will, even though you're not listening to this right now and it's pre-taped. We do appreciate it nonetheless. And for the second half hour, we are going to focus on immigration.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
So, let me bring George back into the discussion.
I am here.
There you are, George.
Yes.
So, you are there, George.
I am here, yes.
Okay. Sometimes you have to double-click these buttons.
I know the feeling.
I don't want to start on the second. I have to double-check if somebody didn't say anything right away. Unless I'm talking to myself, wondering where George went.
No, I'm still here.
Okay, George, let's finish up on Joe Biden real quick.
Yes.
Why does Joe Biden have your support?
Why does Joe Biden have my support? Mainly because he seems to basically kind of fit what Barack Obama doesn't have, which is the experience and somebody that I can trust regarding the regarding Iraq. He's somebody that has been through so much on the Senate floor. He's been through so many different administrations that he can basically, he can either lead himself or, as a vice president, he can fit in what, you know, like what another presidential candidate would not have. And that's something that I think is really special, and that's somebody that I think can really kind of, you know, take us forward. He's somebody who does not dwell on less important issues. I know that there was at one time there was a discussion regarding flag burning, and mm-hmm. Biden immediately said we should not be having these sorts of discussions. And immediately I was just thinking, thank you, somebody who gets what the American public is thinking. The American public doesn't really care about, you know, like about flag burning.
You do realize there's been roughly, I think, 4 flag burning incidents since the Vietnam War.
Right.
In the United States.
Yeah. I know, exactly.
It's not like there's a rampant tide of flag burning all over America.
I know. It's like it's becoming an epidemic, you know, like in the eyes of the Republican Party.
I mean, well, I didn't want to say anything, George, but I happen to be burning a flag right now.
Really?
I mean, it's a little dark. It's a little dark in the room. I didn't want to reach up and turn the light on, so, you know, I just thought I'd light up a flag.
Well, you know, like, you know, well, pardon me while I call Rush Limbaugh then and tell him.
Yeah. It's like, so, but that's the sort of way they treat this issue. Like, everybody's burning flags and protesting America.
I know. It's like a zombie epidemic. If somebody bites you on the neck, all of a sudden you want to burn a flag.
You want to burn, yeah. Just talking about it makes me want to burn 4 more.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to have to just put it on the to-do list for today, take out the trash, burn a half dozen flags.
Hey,
know?
Everybody's got a pyromaniac in them, apparently. So.
Yeah. Well, I would just basically, you know, show my patriotism.
Oh, exactly.
Boy, that's really walking a line, isn't it?
Oh, of course. That's basically
that's really, yeah. I mean, you know, that's also a great discussion for another time.
Yeah.
I wanted to give you a Newt's direct quote from his speech to the National Federation of Republican Women.
Oh, this should
sounds
be fun.
Sounds sort of like some sort of cheap wrestling organization.
Yeah, it's one of those organizations where it's just like, we know you like us, so we're going to say everything we possibly can to get you to like us more.
Yeah. I mean, he was speaking to a booming crowd of 100 women, and
oh,
he was talking about bilingual education, and this is what he had to say, if I have the exact quote. Okay, the quote, the American people believe English should be the official language of the government. We should replace bilingual education with immersion in English so people learn the knowledge, people learn the common language of the country, and they learn the language of prosperity, not the language of living in the ghetto. Or a ghetto. Citizenship requires passing a test on American history and English. If that's true, then why do we not have to create ballots in any language except English? Boy, that's poorly worded. So basically, he's calling every other language that isn't English the language of the ghetto.
Yeah.
But
and
that, specifically,
and that's,
but
that
we
is,
know,
that
we know, we know he's
sad.
Not talking about Japanese.
That is so beyond sad that, you know, I really don't understand, you know, like how this man who has this much power can dedicate it to dividing the country even more than it's already divided.
He's an intelligent man.
Yes.
He's a professor of history. He was the Speaker of the House.
I would love him to be. One thing that he has not been yet is a substitute teacher over on the Upper East Side of New York City.
Yeah.
And that's something that I would love to see. I would love to see him just kind of go in and take a couple of days and everything and actually understand, like, what is going on with our education system.
Yeah, and the common war cry when we talk about the education system for Republicans is either A, privatization,
yep,
or B, it's all the teacher's fault.
Yeah.
Our teachers, that's the Bush leave every child behind plan.
Right.
I mean, and basically, the Bush plan jerry-rigs the system of standardized testing, so the teachers teach the tests, students pass the tests, test scores go up, so everybody thinks the education system's fine.
Right.
You know, all
it's,
it does is create
it's
a false
really
security.
Sad, like the way
but,
that,
you know,
that
the Leave No Child Behind thing is basically about penalizing schools and teachers.
Yes.
And public schools and teachers with the future incentive of privatization.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about. And I don't think you can fix the education, the public education system. If you take away the public education system and start to privatize it, what they are removing is a fundamental tenet of American democracy and rights.
Yes, you're basically taking away so many different people's ability to have their children educated. You know, there's
what you're creating is an intellectual caste system.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're going to be condemning and damning some people who cannot afford a private education, or for whom the government voucher isn't enough to still private to send their kids to the best schools. You're going to be forcing those people to stay in the struggling public schools.
Yeah,
and I don't see how this would help the public school system.
It would not help it at all. I mean, that was one thing that, you know, like what you said, that's what the Republican Party is basically trying to do is privatization. It's basically taking out the public school system. That's what they're trying to do. And
privatization doesn't always work for every situation.
No, and it definitely does not work in this situation. I've been through both, you know, like private school and public mm-hmm. schools. You know, like I've been through, I've done private school from second grade, third grade, fourth grade, and half of fifth grade. And when I felt that, you know, like that, when I and my parents felt that that something wasn't working, that something really wasn't happening, we went over to the public school that I had been in kindergarten and first grade. And even though I still struggled in fifth grade, by sixth grade, I was like back to where I needed to be. And I credit so much of that public school system for that. You know,
it's the blanket generalizations of extremism. Not all public schools are bad.
Right.
Not all teachers are overpaid. Not all private schools are great.
Yeah.
Those general statements get us into so much trouble as a country.
The only sort of blanket statement that you can make with the public school system is that the public teachers are underpaid. That's the only blanket system that you have to go with.
Property taxes where I live are fairly high, but in this entire region, in this section of the state, we not only have some of the best public schools, like the four districts right around where I live are basically in the top 20 to 50 in this state.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Pennsylvania is a fairly large state, 67 counties, large population. When you take it out even further, our schools basically turn away so many qualified candidates. Teachers want to teach here.
Yeah.
It's not just the pay rate. It's the fact that they're quality districts.
Yeah.
And people complain and they gripe about a quality education, especially those that don't have children. I don't have children. I would still gladly pay. When the day comes when I buy a home somewhere, I will gladly pay the property tax, the school tax, because those children grow up and become the economic resources for a community.
Yes.
Those children are basically the future economic development, and so many people don't understand that. They're just worried about their tax bill.
Exactly.
And that's how President Bush suckered a lot of people in.
Yep.
With his permanent tax cuts.
Oh.
Yeah. Now we're not, you know, the 01 tax cuts he now wants to make permanent, and he's throwing a hissy because the Democrats have agreed to make most of them permanent, mm-hmm. but they're throwing out the corporate tax gifts and the tax gifts for the wealthy. And he's just going ballistic.
Yeah.
And I wrote on the Political Universe MySpace page yesterday that if this president would care as much about the Iraq war as he does about taxes,
then
we would have an extra $750 billion.
Yeah, we would have had this thing taken care of before he would have been reelected, if that was the case.
Yeah. Now on the immigration issue, now I've got to admit, every time I write an immigration column, every single time,
mm-hmm.
I get email telling me, A, I'm completely un-American and a horrible human being because I support immigration.
Right.
And B, I'm a terrible human being because I don't support immigration.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I intentionally sometimes find things in the news just to put out there that are going to tick off the anti-immigrant people. When I find a new study or something, like the most recent really good one was a study that found that illegal aliens don't come in and take American jobs.
Yeah.
Immigrants, America basically has a labor shortage. We're an older population. We're not having as many children as we used to. We have a labor shortage. And a lot of the illegal aliens come and fill jobs that it's not that Americans won't do. We don't have enough Americans to do. And nobody wants to hear that argument.
Wow, that's a good point.
You know, that maybe we just don't have enough Americans.
Yeah, and that actually reminds me of something that of a blog that I read earlier this week. It wasn't in a blog. I think it was like the San Francisco Guide or something like that. I came across this one column that basically declared that the Republican Party was dying because of the everything that's basically been going wrong ever since the election day, you know, when when the Democrats finally took back the took back the House and Senate. And there was a, there was an interesting little part in that, though. It was saying that while, yes, the Republican Party is dying because the support for the Republican Party is dwindling, at the same time, though, over in about the – it started talking about the birth rate and how amongst conservative households, the birth rate is rising because there's more procreating going on, while on the Democratic side – things are, you know, things are not happening. So they're basically saying that even though the Republican Party support is dwindling, there's more Republican breeding going on.
Well, that was great.
It was one of those articles that I just couldn't get away from.
Yeah, well, I think, though, the good thing is political ideology and persuasion isn't genetic.
Right.
So these children have a fighting chance.
Which was another thing that, that the guy mentioned. He said that, you know, that since there's more of a chance that since there seems to be more Republican breeding, you say, going on, there's a bigger there's also a chance that once they hit the teenage level that they're going to rebel against their parents and vote Democratic just to basically spite their parents. And
yeah, I mean, that's pretty common.
It was a very interesting read, to say the least.
That's a very unique read. Yeah. Oh, by the way, did anything catch your attention in the news this week? Anything you want to talk about?
There were a couple of things. I mean, obviously the whole, you know, like Alberto Gonzalez story has been just...
Without Will here, I felt free to leap away from Alberto for a week.
Has just been going a little bit getting a little bit more interesting. You have the whole Samson quotes that were basically just kind of contradicting everything that Alberto Gonzalez has been saying.
Well, you know, I like to think of it as Michael Clark Duncan was the guy in the Green Mile with the special powers, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I've never really seen that movie. Well, in political terms, Michael Clark Duncan is Karl Rove.
Yeah.
And Alberto Gonzalez is about to walk a long Green Mile.
Oh, yeah.
unless somebody pulls a miracle.
I would actually equate Karl Rove more with the guy who did not wet the sponge. To put on the guy's head. Like I said, I don't know if you saw the movie.
Yeah, I just keep saying every week Alberto's a dead man walking, and it's only a matter of time. I read all about this. Samson.
There are more people that are conservative voices that are basically saying, let the man speak. Let's hold off judgment until. Was it April 18th?
The 17th, yeah.
17th, when he goes and makes a statement. But now it's getting to a point where people are already saying that there was over in the McLaughlin group this morning. I know one of the people that were there. She was saying that by Good Friday he's going to be asked to step down as soon as Congress adjourns for the Easter vacation, like around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That's when it's going to happen.
I mean, he's become such a political liability.
Yes.
I don't care how nice of a guy Alton is. He's a terrible attorney general. And at best, I don't know if I wrote it for 401 or elsewhere. At best, Alberto Gonzalez was incompetent and a horrible office manager.
Yeah.
At best. If all this stuff was going on that he had no knowledge of. Yeah. At worst, he's a political hack and lying.
Yeah.
There's no good way to put this for Alberto Gonzalez.
Yeah.
He's either an idiot or a liar.
Yeah, exactly. Can we just get somebody in one of these big seats of power that is not an old friend of Bush's?
Yeah.
I just want
an entire government full of people who know what they're doing.
Exactly. Not somebody who's getting a referral. You know, like I want somebody who has a resume
Far left liberals view Bush as evil. The administration's evil. This administration's not evil. It's absolutely inept.
Yes.
They're a bunch of bumbling clowns. They can't do anything right.
Right. You have organizations like, say, Fox News. You know, that are basic. They're the ones that are evil because they're the ones that are putting the spin on it. That are saying that everything that the Bush administration is doing is okay.
Yeah, and it's not. I mean, exactly. They're just basically, they're a propaganda arm is what they are.
Yes.
And I just wish that they would just come out straight out and be like, look, put the RNC logo up instead of their Fox flag logo.
Right.
And be like, well, we're the official Republican TV network, and I really wouldn't have a problem with them.
Yeah.
As long as they don't try to deceive people into letting them think there's something up there, they are something other than they're not.
Yeah. Oh, and another thing we've learned, another thing that they're not, is funny. That's another thing that I've learned.
I take it you watched that Daily Show ripoff thing they tried
to do. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I mean, that is awful. That is.
I read one review and said, no, thank you. Is it really terrible?
It's just lame, more than anything. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of sitting down and watching, like, either a really bad sitcom or a really bad movie or something, and looking at the time and realizing that only 2 minutes have passed when you feel like 15 have gone by.
Yeah, come on. George, haven't you been to a movie and had that same feeling?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have. For me, for the most part, you know, like, one thing that I like to do is and this is something that a friend of mine has called me out on many times, is that when I pay to see a movie, I try to look for the good in what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I'll look a little too much.
You didn't have to justify that spending.
I want to find something that said, you know, like, okay.
I have the same sort of problem, but like, here in Pennsylvania, we're in rural southwestern Pennsylvania. We have a drive-in theater 2 miles from my house.
Yes.
And there's two movies for $5.
Mm-hmm.
I have found that, and these are new releases. I have found that my threshold for quality is much different when I only pay $2.50 per movie.
I would definitely.
Than when I
that.
Plop down, you know, God knows, close to like what $20 anymore for two people.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Well, 22 I mean, over here.
Yeah, I mean it's like $9 here, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Whatever I pay on the $2.50 per movie, I tend to put up with a lot more.
Yes. Yes.
I'm much more forgiving.
Yeah.
But when I go in and I spend the big money, because let's face it, I mean even if I go real cheap, oh, we have an IM. Well, let's see who IM does. Okay. Well, I can't believe it. I think we actually might have gotten our first listener IM.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody has a request to call in.
Oh, excellent.
And I'm going to say, yes, they can. Yeah, see, I'm not really good at this sort of multitasking IM thing.
I understand.
Usually I'm going to have Will handle all this.
Okay.
While we talk. Now, okay, they're just asking me for the number. It's on the homepage. I put it everywhere. let's see. Oh, I don't even have it up. Wow. It's 718-664-6169, right?
Let me just make sure of that.
That's what you dialed.
Yep.
Yeah. It's bad that I've actually got it memorized by now, but this is the first time anybody's ever wanted to call it. What did I tell you about immigration?
Ah.
Okay. Okay. I told immigration brings people out in droves.
Well, this kind of proves that point right there.
Yeah, immigration's one of those issues that you can really get an audience going with fast.
Yep.
You know, that people have such a strong feeling about it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not easy to really sit there and say I'm pro-immigrant or anti-immigrant, because whatever you do, someone's going to call in or yell or email you or, you know.
Right.
You know, I just basically kind of stay in my position. And hopefully, I've been called every name in the book, George, since I've been at 411. I've been called everything.
I can believe it.
You name it.
We said last week, we got some passionate readers.
Oh, they're incredibly passionate. But especially
they're terrific. We love them.
Especially if you step on any of the professional wrestlers' toes.
Oh, yeah.
I get hordes of emails, you know. It's just really, really, really nuts to basically open up your inbox one day and find that 10 or 12 people hate you.
Yeah.
It's really, I have fun with
that.
I like it.
There were a couple of times during the 2004 election.
It's been a long time since somebody actually wrote in and blamed me.
Really?
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun. Now, most of the people that write in and criticize basically write in and have very intelligent criticism.
Of course.
You get a lot of email in that zone that is so well thought out and so intelligent.
Those kinds I do enjoy. There were, like I said last week when I did my report on the 2004 election, and I got creamed with a whole, you know, like a whole lot of hate mail. There were a couple of people that wrote in that had paragraphs that basically, you know, said in a very intelligent, very thought out, you know, like basis of why they disagree with me and why I'm wrong. And say
but then
all of a sudden we would get into a really good back and forth discussion, and
yeah.
It turns out that by the end of the email thread, both of us understand each other's points, and both
yeah.
of us, you know, even though we say agree to disagree, we are on a good level.
Now, see, the funny thing was, people used to brutalize me until they found out, because I never actually went out and told anybody I was the editor of the Politics Zone.
Right.
I just kind of kept writing my columns and handling the editorial stuff behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Well, it went from you stupid douchebag introduced an email, let's say,
right.
to Mr. Eastley.
Ah.
And I was like, well, how does that happen?
<That's>
I'm still the same jerk
you
thought I was like 3 weeks ago. Yeah, it's really kind of a funny thing. But I think the immigration discussion we could carry through basically for weeks if we wanted.
Yeah.
It can go on indefinitely.
Oh, yeah. Because
essentially.
No,
I mean, it's one of those issues
no
that I really wish we were able to sit down and get into.
Yeah. It's one of those things where there's really no clear-cut side.
Yeah, there
really
isn't. I'm not one of those build a fence, throw all the immigrants out.
Right.
But I'm not one of those give illegal aliens all the rights in the world people either.
Right.
I'm firmly in the middle.
Yeah.
And that means that I can kind of be persuaded either way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to sit there and tell you you're an idiot, but I do think that the racial underpinnings of those kind of comments like Newt Gingrich made this week, that's just not necessary. It's not good for constructive political discussion. It's not. It doesn't add anything to the debate at all.
Right.
It doesn't help, and it's not necessary. And I know it rallies the troops,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't do us any favors.
Right. All it does is
just
get people more angry.
Just gets people riled up and makes them pick a side.
Right.
And that's all that happens here.
Which is something that we need to not have, you know, like as much anymore in politics. Enough with this pick
yeah.
a side thing.
Yeah, I just wish people would stay calm and actually think through an issue.
Yeah.
That's all I want. I mean, just somebody who isn't going to think that just because an idea comes from what they perceive as the other side of the aisle, it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Both sides can have good ideas.
Oh, exactly.
And you shouldn't automatically throw one out because it didn't come from your team.
Right.
Well, George, I'm going to try something different that Will and I have been talking about. We have about a minute left.
Okay.
But George, do you like rock and roll?
Do I like rock and roll?
Do you like rock and roll?
I love rock and roll.
Well, that's good.
To quote Joan Jett.
Because, you know, do you like Schoolhouse Rock, George?
Schoolhouse Rock? Ooh.
Yeah.
As in, because knowledge is power?
Yes.
Yes.
Well, George, in order to play out the show this week, we're going to do a little Schoolhouse Rock.
All right.
So I'll see you next week. We probably won't be on Easter Sunday. We'll probably be on the Saturday before, but I'll see you next week and say your goodbyes, George.
Sounds great. I'll see you next week.
There we go.
Oh, you sure got to climb a lot of steps to get to this Capitol building here in Washington. Well, I wonder who that sad little scrap of paper is.
I'm just a bill, yes, I'm only a bill, and I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City. It's a long, long wait while I'm sitting in committee, but I know I'll be a law someday. At least I hope and pray that I will, but today I am still just a bill.
Gee, Bill, you certainly have a lot of patience and courage.
Well, I got this far. When I started, I wasn't even a bill. I was just an idea. Some folks back home decided they wanted a law passed, so they called their local congressman, and he said, "You're right, there ought to be a law." And then he sat down and wrote me out and introduced me to Congress, and I became a bill. And I'll remain a bill.